You're listening to a Chicks Talking Footy podcast on Joy 94.9. What's not to like about that?
Well, hello one and all. You are with the footy-obsessed gang from Chicks Talking Footy. We're in the middle of International Women's Week this week, so we're going with the theme and being women.
We didn't even need to try that.
Didn't even need to do anything. But in the studio with me, I'm Fiona Newton, and I have Motti.
You do? That's me.
And Rachel, and we're reunited and we feel so good because Danae Gibson she's come all the way from WA just to do a couple of segments on the show.
Yeah, that's it.
David, welcome.
Good to be with you, chicks.
Danae was a founding member of Chicks Talking Footy back in the day.
Back in the day.
We met half an hour before we went on air together.
I noticed you haven't changed the theme yet, Fee.
No.
So it's still Melbourne's Got the Footy.
And we need to insert and WA and Tasmania. And
I'm here to tell you all about what's going on in the West.
Yeah,
or some of it anyway.
You're our official WA correspondent.
Yeah, I like that.
So we like feeling like we're a well-rounded national sports show. So.
Well, of course, we've got a crow.
We do have a crow.
And if we had a North Melbourne supporter, we'd have half a Tassie covered.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm Hawthorn and Rachel's Hawthorn, so we...
We've got four games in Tasmania.
We did actually chat.
Not Western Suburbs, I'm Essendon, so it's true.
Well, we did actually chat to the CEO of AFL Tasmania today, didn't we Motti?
Did.
Trish Squires. So she's told us all about what's going on there. So we've kind of got the country covered tonight. And
a few bits missing, close.
One of our friends, Emma Race from the Outer Sanctum, stole my job.
Oh, really?
She became the number one ticket holder of the Hawthorn Football Club this week.
Congratulations,
Emma. Well, it's a
Emma
great
Race.
Achievement, isn't it? And she's perfect for the role. So we're going to actually chat to her and find out what a number one ticket holder actually does.
Yeah.
And she does have a role. So big night. And we've got some contentious issues on the dinner table, as usual, that we'll serve at and chat through tonight. Mm-hmm. But it was round five of AFLW.
It's almost over.
Well, yeah, it is almost over because there's only two more rounds left. Mm-hmm. So there's some teams that you would imagine now can't get up.
It goes
or
too
very
quickly.
Difficult to get up.
Yes. Well, at Susan Alberti's breakfast, charity breakfast this morning, Nicole Livingston actually said to Katie Brennan and Sharni Layton, "No, so I don't actually think your teams are going to make it."
Well,
the Bulldogs and Collingwood.
Yeah, well, they're both the bottom of their conferences, so it's unlikely.
Yeah, I agree. And
I'm still reminded that last year there was like a games difference between second and seventh out of eight teams.
That's true.
So it's always been close. And now there's a bunch of teams that have got the same number of wins in those conferences. Are you clear on the conferences, friends?
We think we've unraveled
this. Can you remember which team is where?
No.
Okay.
But I know who's not going to win, so... I'm looking at it that way. Yes, I can't. Yes, I sort of do.
Well, this week, Adelaide Crows hit the top of Conference A and looked very good. But let's talk about the games in order. So Geelong versus Brisbane, that was down at the... Was that down at the Cattery? No.
No, it was in Brisbane.
And Brisbane actually achieved a great result in scoring the lowest ever score in the AFLW.
A calamity for them.
In their home ground. So
one goal by Kate McCarthy.
Yeah. So, I mean, very surprising because the week before they looked quite good.
They did. They just couldn't move the ball. Yeah.
So would you have thought before it that Brisbane should have won that?
Yes.
Yes.
I would have tipped them.
Yeah.
Had I been tipping?
Based on the evidence of the weeks prior.
Yes,
I know. I was really surprised.
But so that makes it a really good win for Geelong.
For the Cats, yes, definitely.
So they were a bit wonky the first couple of rounds, Geelong, but
They looked a lot more convincing.
Now, yeah,
they've been up and down, I would say. They've had an up and down season.
Well, they're just gelling, aren't they?
That's right.
Yeah, they're one of the clubs that would benefit if it was a 10-round competition.
Short,
yeah,
it is really too short.
Yes, but we were talking about their recruiting style being different to North Melbourne's. So they've sort of recruited more for a long-term
plan. So they've recruited younger players that they'll develop.
Pretty
North
much,
Melbourne basically absorbed all the good players that already exist.
Well, pretty much like Melbourne did originally. Melbourne recruited a young cohort to build over the years. And North Melbourne had that Melbourne University connection. So the Muggers were all going home. So yes. Many of their players really wanted to go back and play for Norths because they would have done that right from the start if that club had been in the comp.
That's right. Well, that's exactly right. And actually, the Muggers past and present did a guard of honour.
Yeah, how lovely.
This Aww. Week as well. So that was beautiful. There was dozens of them, but yes, didn't perform as well as they would have liked. But the next game was Collingwood and Carlton. This was actually a really good game.
And close.
I agree. I thought Collingwood was going to win.
I really felt for them after that game because either team could have won that. And they just
didn't score in the last quarter. It's just not good enough. That's how you win football.
And 4-10 for Carlton, you know, it implies there were lots more chances.
Exactly.
More inside 50s.
They were inaccurate.
Yeah, Darcy Vessio kicked a great goal, snapped a great goal, but then couldn't get them from pretty easy set shots.
So in the first quarter was all Carlton, second quarter all Collingwood.
Yeah.
It was odd, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was there a wind factor in that, Motti? Because I've noticed a couple of games, like I've been in Frio, and I've noticed that, you know, sometimes a wind, like Casey Fields, when Melbourne play at home, wind's a real factor in those unprotected grounds.
There wasn't. It was Icon Park and it was 37 degrees.
Oh, where wasn't it 37 degrees?
Yeah, it was the super oppressive Saturday night, wasn't it?
So. And I think the lights stopped working
started
to not work again, which would have
That's
been...
That's right, the lights went out. They've got to fix the lights or just play during the day.
Yeah, but it's so hot, you know, like you do want night games.
That's true.
Yeah.
Basically fix the lights.
Now, I understand that the feedback from the players was about not playing Friday nights, that it was hard to balance their lives, jobs, AFL season. Mm. So that's one of the reasons why we don't have Friday night games.
That's right. Well, we asked Nicole Livingston that question, and that's exactly what she came up with. And she said it's come from them as much as, you know, in the networks. That was actually a really good discussion we had with Nicole, and she did shed some light on things that I had misinterpreted or thought the answers were different.
It was good to be able to sit down and go, why is that decision made? And from when you're sitting back just looking at, you know, social media or what's coming out, it's easy to kind of go, oh, I can't believe they don't have enough Friday night games, or you know, I can't believe they're not using they're not charging us for games and all this sort of stuff. When you find out why and the thinking behind things,
maybe the AFL needs to be more transparent in their decision making process, and then the community would have a better understanding, and that might stop some of their concerns through social media
Basically everyone needs to listen to our interview and they'd be fine.
That's so true.
Rachel, this morning Sam Lane questioned Nicole Livingston from the AFL specifically on that factor. What is the long-term vision? You know, can we see it, you know, more emphatically explained to the community? There are a couple of players, Katie Brennan and Sharni Layton, and Nicole and Sam having a chat about this season and into the future. So did you feel, Motti, that Nicole explained where we were going in terms of a vision of the AFLW?
I did a bit. I thought that was an interesting byplay between Sam and Nicole. I thought there was a tiny bit of antagonism. I thought Sam was quite direct, and I thought Nicole was responding quite directly. Mm. And my take on it was, this is actually really good to see. Mm. Sam forced her Nicole to respond, I felt, with the question she asked, and Nicole sort of went, yeah, but I'm not telling you that bit because no business tells. So it was really interesting, other than nothing against panels, but sometimes panels are, and then I did this, and then A, and then B, and then C. Good, you know, go and eat your chicken or beef. But it was quite different. It was a bit more engaging.
Well, Shelley Ware was the MC, did a great job, and there was a room full of people raising funds for Susan Alberti's Medical Research Foundation and Australian Football Women's Foundation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is now being set up to help fund the grassroots and the pathways.
Fantastic.
There's a quickly go through the last few games. Melbourne pretty much annihilated the Giants down at Casey. Oh, no, it wasn't at Casey.
No, it was at Blacktown.
It was at Blacktown, that's right. So, yeah, but Melbourne just completely dominated. I watched a fair bit of that game.
And I kept thinking a couple of weeks ago when the conference situation looked dire that Geelong Giants might win three games in a row and be on top of Conference B, but they're still not surging ahead, are they?
No. And Melbourne's Conference A, aren't they?
Mm.
And then the next game was...
Well.
We thought this would be the game of the round, but Adelaide and North... I would have picked North to win that, to be honest, but...
Mm. Adelaide, 10 goals for, geez, yeah, they're a big scoring, fast team, aren't they?
They are. Kearney got 31 disposals. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
In the losing, yeah.
Yeah, yes. When you're in a losing team. So Adelaide now sit on top of Conference A and look pretty good at the moment.
Yep.
Danae, your team, Frio, who we're going to talk a lot more about after the messages, and... Bulldogs, you've won again.
Yeah, well, it was the first time Fremantle have beaten the Western Bulldogs in the three seasons, so that was another reason to celebrate.
And it was a convincing win.
Now, Danae, we're going to get you to stick around and give us a bit of an update about what's going on with WA, and we'd like to hear more about Frio, and I think we've even convinced you to talk about West Coast. So we'll see how that goes here on Chicks Talking Footy.
I'm Katie Brennan from the Western Bulldogs. You're listening to Chicks Talking Footy on Joy 94.9.
Well, you're with Fee, Motti and Rachel and Danae in the studio, 4/6 of the original Chicks Talking Footy.
Yeah.
And, or you might say 75%, I don't know.
I think it's 66.6 or whatever.
Yeah, 60. Yeah, yeah.
That's why we talk about football, not maths.
Where's Bree when you need her?
Yeah, she would. Bree, if you're listening, can you message in and give us the
66.66 reoccurring, I think, is what we're all reaching for.
Anyway, Danae, it's great to see you, by the way.
And yeah, thanks.
We've got a long radio history with you and all brought together by our love of the great game. But you've moved back to WA. Mm. The lure of your partner was much more than we could compete with. So,
yep, sure.
So tell us, WA sounds like an exciting place to be with football. We interviewed Jan Cooper from the West Coast Eagles last week, so we've got a bit of a theme going on.
Well, when we first started Chicks Talking Footy, Jan Cooper was involved with the Fremantle Dockers and helped because of her extensive and impressive history in women's football, helped get Dockers off the ground. And then, of course, West Coast Eagles swooped and stole her. And I've been, with my cynical hat on, I just keep thinking, oh, damn, they're going to come in and they're going to figure out everything from our mistakes, ours being Frio, and then just bloody win the whole thing next year. But of course, with my football loving hat on, it's a great time. There are possibly more chances to watch women play football live in the AFLW next year because there'll be two West Australian teams. So they're one of the teams that will come in next year, and there's changes to the local WAFLW because I think they're even changing the acronym. So the local competition is changing structure, I guess, in that lead up to what I imagine eventually will happen, which is a national competition and then a reserve team for every club in the national competition, and then an under 18 youth girls competition.
Are you saying that that's what you desire to happen, or you think should happen, or you... that it will?
No, I don't. None of those things. I don't know that it will, but it seems to make sense.
Yeah.
Because you need to consolidate resources. Mm. We need to feed a lot of clubs' talent to the elite level. And it's really hard and expensive to run a club of any sort in Australia on that kind of volunteer basis. So the hardest thing for me is that there's only five teams in the WAFL. W competition this year, like the Coastal Titans are now Claremont or Subi. East Fremantle's in, but South Fremantle's not. And I'm just hoping East and South don't merge to become something else, because that's a real rivalry. That's the original derby for us. It's like Collingwood Carlton hating each other, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I think there'll be lots of changes over the next few years. And like Jan Cooper was saying last week, it's early stages and there's a lot of change to happen. Those participation rates are massive across the country, and including WA. So there'll be two, the West Coast Eagles and the Fremantle Dockers will be in the AFLW next year, and that's pretty exciting for Perth and Western Australia.
So I'm gathering, just the way you're speaking quite evenly here, Danae, is that you might even go to a West Coast game? Is that what you're suggesting next year?
You know, I figured out there's a real upside to that. There's someone else to barrack for,
right, against
West Coast.
Yeah.
So I respect West Coast Eagles. They're a really well-run club.
Oh, hit record.
I don't like them. I never did. But I really respect them. And of course, they're enjoying, you know, huge success at the moment because they won the AFL Premiership last year.
Sure did.
And so everywhere I go, there is blue and yellow, which is, you know, hard to swallow, except that when I go to Fremantle Oval and watch the Dockers play in the AFLW, there's purple everywhere, and it's so much fun to be at a suburban ground in Perth watching. And, of course, it's easier when your team's playing well and winning.
What numbers are they getting to the games?
5,000, 6,000.
Gee, it's good,
isn't
it?
You know, in 37 degree heat in the middle of February, where we have Perth Festival, Fringe Festival, there's so much going on. It's
and
a
smaller population.
Yep. Cricket, you know, as well.
Cricket,
obviously, Big Bash, women's cricket.
So great crowds. You can never tell on the telly whichever game we're watching in the AFLW because everyone's hiding in the shadows trying to get some shade because it's so hot. Mm. So there's always more people than it appears to be.
Under the trees.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting dynamic for me because, for example, if, you know, Hawthorn doesn't get into the grand final and there's a Victorian team and an interstate team in the grand final, with the exception of Collingwood and West Coast, I have to say. But generally, Victorians will go for the Victorian team.
Mm.
Yep. WA and South Australia, I have observed,
it's not the same.
You'd go for the opposite team.
Yep.
So if West Coast was in the grand final, I imagine you were going for Collingwood.
Well, for me, like Collingwood and West Coast being in the grand final is like having Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump.
You know?
Like, I don't really want to vote for either of them.
Yes, yes. I think even Victorians felt that way.
Yes,
I thought Collingwood would get to the grand final last year, so I was kind of quietly barracking for them.
Okay. I was too.
Yeah, Fremantle Dockers in there, so, you know, always a good reason. You can always find a reason to barrack for someone, can't you, on any given day?
Nope.
No. I say no
as well.
Well, don't forget that Tim Watson was on West Coast Eagles list for a season. Do you remember that?
He just blocked it from her mind.
No, did he go on the list but didn't play?
That's right.
That doesn't count. Oh, that was his year of retirement.
Yeah.
And then he came back out of retirement and played in a premiership for Essendon.
That's right. Yeah. So Essendon.
Sorry, was that a premiership, Moddy? Was that?
It was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Is Essendon in the AFLW next year?
I don't know.
I don't think we are.
No. I think there's four teams going in next year, which.
Richmond, St Kilda, West Coast.
Richmond, St Kilda, West Coast, and then GWS?
No, they're already in.
They're just not winning.
Gold Coast? It's Gold Coast.
Oh, wow.
It?
What are we like? I can't believe that.
Do you know what I think is interesting? People are saying out loud, as in Nicole Livingston and other people from the AFL, how they expect that the standard will drop a little in the next couple of years.
Well, it's like when Gold Coast and the GWS came into the AFL, you were suddenly stretching.
You're diluting, you know, your talent. But
exactly.
So, yeah, but they're actually saying it. Yeah, we expect there to be a flat spot for a couple of years.
Wow.
Well, they could take AFLX out of the equation and that would help me enjoy it more, I think.
That was mentioned this morning at the AFLW breakfast.
Fisticuffs.
Look, a lot of people have said the same thing. We've got a range of views on the show. I think Beck loves the AFLX. She dropped it on the show.
Yeah,
and
typical.
We all didn't know what to do with ourselves. But she made some valid points.
She always does make valid points. She's good at that.
She's a lawyer for a good reason.
Mm.
But she said that, you know, we can all coexist together. You don't have to follow it if you don't want to.
No, No, I agree. But it's still, you know, I'd like that money spent on the women's game.
Well, as Nicole Livingston said this morning, though, even if AFLX didn't exist, that there's no extra money for AFLW like that.
I think from my perspective, it's more about overshadowing.
I can't agree with that.
AFLX is bringing its own money from sponsorship. I don't know. We're not part of the AFL house. We don't understand how
that works. No, but I know how they say, no, that money wouldn't necessarily just go to the AFLW. No, it wouldn't, but it would go back into the pot, and therefore there would be.
But the money, I think maybe Nicole Livingston's point is the money only exists because of AFLX. So if there was no AFLX, there would be no money to go back into any pot distribute it, because it wouldn't exist, because there would be no sponsorship. So it's effectively a commercial game.
Is that what they're saying? I think it's making AFL money.
I would be of that opinion. I obviously have nothing to back that up. But my concern with AFLX is that it overshadows the women's game. The women's game needs more momentum. I think that's why it's also very important that you do have things like the AFLW and those competitions deciding how they're going to change and they're going to morph to be more, to get those resources to become a better competition, to get more talent in. And I think AFLX just is this random game that I'm sure it's lots of fun, but just overshadows the season for AFLW.
Yeah, it could be placed at a different time. We have had a message. They didn't say who it was, but it says AFLX forever.
Well, I'll tell you who that is.
You reckon that's Dales?
That's Boundary Beck.
I don't know.
It is.
So I've got to check the number.
I know.
A couple of points. Nicole Livingston talked about the use of rectangle shaped fields and using the most of limited space, and that's one of the values of AFLX. It could be women could play AFLXW in the future. And one of the things that I read this week was that this was in Michael Warner from the Herald Sun wrote that the AFL's 12-person executive team took home more than $10.73 million in wages last year, including $3.56 million in bonuses. And I'm suggesting that perhaps some of their KPIs could be about how much money they raise for women.
Exactly. I totally agree.
Yes.
Right on. Sing it. Testify.
Amen and hallelujah.
The AFL also, and let me just scroll as I go, but they released their figures yesterday, and they've made a profit.
It's good. Not a profit organisation.
2018, there was a profit, so that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, well, it's a not-for-profit organisation, so all that money needs to go back into the organisation. So it's, yeah.
That's great, but I think more money needs to be put into the AFLW as opposed to a match that's there for a bit of fun and for commercial reasoning.
And Gold Coast is that other
fourth club. But isn't what you're saying, isn't all the money coming from those sponsors?
That's my understanding of what AFLX is from what you've advised, Nicole, told people. But the other issue that Danae's brought up about the KPIs and about the monies that they've been able to make on top as bonuses because of the monies they've been able to bring in, that money needs to be redistributed and their KPIs need to change. And there needs to be more resources and finances into the AFLW.
Yes, sorry to go back to the messages again, but we have had a funny one come in. So it's love hearing Danae talking about the Eagles through clenched teeth. See you at the AFL Eagles Dockers Derby next year, Danae. Go Eagles, Casey signs.
Yeah, yeah. Won't that be fantastic to have a derby? I mean, and the Frio, let's just for a moment dwell on the fact that Frio have been a surprise packet for most people watching AFLW this year. Turbo Bowers has made an enormous difference.
And she's been great.
She was a marquee player who did a couple of knees, and now you can understand why people were bullish about the Dockers back in the day before she did those knees. It's been fun to watch them. They seem to be enjoying themselves, and I can't wait for a derby.
Casey, if you can see the studio right now, there are definitely clenched teeth. But listen, thanks so much for popping back into your home base of footy.
Yeah.
And been a pleasure to see you. And good luck to the Frio Dockers in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully you'll make the top two.
Well, I'm going down to Geelong to watch them on the weekend. And
fabulous.
Dreams are free. So if Frio beat Geelong this weekend, then it comes down to trying to beat North Melbourne in the last...
Wow, that'll be a great game.
Last game of the season for Frio before the finals. And in true can-you-believe-it fashion, I can't go to that home game because I'm going to a wedding.
A gay wedding.
Yes.
Do you know what? I've been to three gay weddings this year already.
Do they clash with football?
Yes, they clash. People. I'm campaigning against marriage now. Now, in a moment, we are going to speak to a very good friend of ours from the Outer Sanctum, Emma Race. She's just been appointed as the number one ticket holder for the Hawthorn Football Club. And look, we're not jealous at all. You're on Chicks Talking Footy on Joy 94.9.
I'm Jason Twizel McSheen from the Purple Bombers, and you're listening to Chicks Talking Footy on Joy 94.9.
Oh, I was one of your kind, Moddy.
Go Bombers!
The Purple Bombers are having a Idaho Hobbit event this year. It's going to be big. There's going to be other LGBTI supporter groups involved, and the Chicks Talking Footy team may be
involved
in some way. We'll let you know and keep you informed about that as we go through. However, we have a very good friend of ours on the line. Her name is Emma Race. She's from the Outer Sanctum. And when we started this show at the beginning of 2016, little known to us that another show had formed at exactly the same time. And they've become our sisters of the pod. And also, Emma has recently been announced last night, actually, that she's a number one ticket holder of the Hawthorn Football Club. Welcome to Chicks Talking Footy, Emma.
It is such a great pleasure. Hello, how are you all?
We're wonderful. We're great. And very jealous. Very jealous. So last night you were at the Hawthorn Football Club season launch, and a little girl's dream came true, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Well, it sure did, because as a child, I was born in 75, I thought that I would play for Hawthorn one day. I assumed that I would. Back in 1975, that was a pretty crazy dream.
Ambitious.
Little girl, it was. And I didn't even have a football, so I was really battling up against it. I had no means. And I was being, I was in the pleated netball skirt, but I was always so football curious that it became quite an obsession for me. I was about seven when I discovered that I probably wouldn't be able to play, and I it was a fairly devastating realisation. But I looked, as I scoured all of the grounds out at Waverley to work out, which women's role I could have, like what women would doing on the football field, and I discovered that there was a few women who were running water. And so as a seven-year-old, I wrote a letter to the club asking if I could run water for the club, and I got a letter back saying that I wouldn't be used at that time. Oh. Really devastated. But I remained a true, proud, passionate, paid-up hawk, hashtag always. And last night, it was announced that I'm going to be the number one ticket holder, which is a really great thrill and a real honour, but football and Hawthorn specifically have been my muse for a lifetime.
And we think it's amazing, and we think you're the perfect person for it. But the one main thing we don't know is, what does the number one ticket holder actually do?
Look, it's a really good question. I was like, is it like the King of Moomba?
Jane Bunn. Jane Bunn is the queen this year. It's you and Jane Bunn.
Is it Jane Bunn?
Yes, it is.
Does the ticket, is it like a novelty check? Do I get a really big ticket? What happens? Usually and traditionally for Hawthorn, it's different for all different clubs, but traditionally Hawthorn have always had a male and a female concurrently as the number one ticket holders. And usually it's been, I got handed the baton from Gwen Crimmins, who you will know that Peter Crimmins was her husband, and he has been a really revered figure and player and leader at the Hawthorn Footy Club. And before that, it was Dulcie Kennedy, who was the wife of John Kennedy. So when I heard names like Kennedy and Crimmins followed by Race, again, I'm just going to remind you, I didn't have a football in my house growing up. No brothers, Dad didn't play, I didn't play. It's kind of shocking, but I got invited to Jeff's office, and Jeff Kennett, the president, and after having a quick argument about our politics and our differences, he asked me if I would be interested and that the board was keen for me to take on the role. And I made a noise, which I think was a burp, might have been a cry. I'm not entirely sure what happened. But then he said that he's really well aware that there's a whole lot of Hawthorn members that are female that really haven't been catered to. And he thought that at this point in time, and with the way the world is, that I was someone who could maybe help really connect with our female members, but also our male members, and make them feel really welcome. And as you know, as part of the Outer Sanctum, We've developed a number of programs that we roll out, like Kick and Coffee and live events and things like that. And they are all the brainchild of me at 3 o'clock in the morning when I can't sleep. So I'm looking forward to kind of channeling all that stuff for this footy club that I really love, but I also felt was really in need of this. And so I was really proud that the club was having this conversation, and the fact that it's a conversation that is being held with me is overwhelming and shocking.
Emma, I think you're a great facilitator of that conversation, and there'll be lots of really interesting elements of the year ahead for you as number one ticket holder. But I want to know, you come from a mixed family. You have three beautiful children, and does number one ticket holder outrank in the mother-daughter future stakes over the Carlton runner of their father?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. Look, I would say definitely, and I'd even say if he wasn't running for the Carlton women's team, I'd still say that number one ticket holder wins because my youngest Phoebe is six, but she had this amazing statistic. She was born in 2013, so she had a premiership every year of her first 3 years of life
from Hawthorn
Football Club, and then you added Tacker fourth on when the VFLW girls got up and won last year. So they have been well looked after by the Hawthorn Footy Club, but if you ask the girls, they have kits in every colour, and you know I so proudly support all of the women in the AFL and VFLW, but if you ask the girls who they support, they always say Darabin because that's who they play for, and I'm like, I can't argue with that.
That's
I
great.
Really can't that's argue with that, but I'll just take it one week at a time, I reckon, and see which way it falls.
It's a very Switzerland approach. Actually, I've been with my partner 6 years, and she thought for the first 3 years of our relationship that Hawthorn just won the premierships.
Yeah.
And fair enough.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that I'm really excited about with this is that I'm going to rope you guys in.
Yes, we're in.
I'm going to rope you in.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I was going to write you a letter and see if I could... Sorry, I was going to write you a letter and see if I could be your water runner.
Yes, I was going to volunteer as well.
I'm not helping.
I'm not going to. I won't take water, but I will take beer. And we will definitely have plenty of them in the outer. But like the whole purpose of the Outer Sanctum and you guys as well, we share so much common ground in our Venn diagram of broadcasting that inclusion is my, you know, that's what gets me out of bed in the morning, and to make sure that everyone feels welcome at the Hawthorn Footy Club. And I know that that hasn't always been the case. And if I could do anything to open the doors up a little bit wider and make sure that everyone can get through, make sure there's ramps at every ground, make sure that there's, you know, access for people who've never been, who want to come back, people who are just curious about football and haven't found their place, that I really want that to be something, I guess, inclusion is going to be the most significant motif of the work that I'm going to do at Hawthorn.
Yeah, well, I know you were at the Hawks Pride launch last year, and we'd definitely love to get behind whatever you do as well. And
definitely.
And the Chicks Talking Footy team. So, well, me and Rachel out of the Hawks. The Chicks Talking Footy team.
Well, you said beer, so maybe.
So the others will come along as well. But well done. We're very proud of you and everything you do with the Outer Sanctum. And we'll see you for that beer sometime soon.
Can't wait. Thanks so much,
Sam. Well done. Congratulations.
Thanks, bye.
Thanks for your support, ladies.
You're listening to Chicks Talking Footy with me, Motti, Fee and Rachel. We now have Trish Squires on the line. She's the CEO of AFL Tasmania, and so we thought we needed to have a chat to see what's happening down there. Welcome, Trish.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. So it's a Wednesday, so it's midweek, hump day, they say, in the world. How is it down there?
Oh, look, I think Wednesdays may not be hump day for people that work in football because we work on the weekends, but it certainly has been a pretty busy period, actually, with the AFLW and JLT now starting.
Yeah, well, we've got a few different focuses with the football at the moment. We can get, you know, decision anxiety about what to watch on the weekends.
Exactly.
Now, Trish, you've been working in and around the AFL for quite a long time. You started as an AFL trainee with the Melbourne Football Club in the year 2000. And at that point, what were your plans career-wise?
Well, look, I grew up really loving footy. So my mum loved footy. My brothers were really good at footy. certainly back when I was younger, not that it was that long ago, but girls didn't necessarily play football like they do today. So I never really donned the footy boots. I did attempt in high school and found it really difficult to pick it up. But I always loved it. Barrack for St Kilda as a young girl and used to go to Moorabbin. And then I did start barracking for the D's and a very mad D supporter and actually got my 20-year consecutive membership this year.
Oh, congratulations.
Well done there.
Yes, I've got a certificate, which is great. But, look, I always thought, like, that was a dream, really, to work in football. And as an 18-year-old working at the Melbourne Football Club, like, that sort of opened my eyes to the industry. And I spent a lot of my career at the Reach Foundation, which was founded by the late Jim Steins. And he was obviously really involved in the Melbourne Footy Club. And I, at one point, was the CEO of the Reach Foundation and then have moved back into footy. And I've really enjoyed being back in football because I think football and community is really similar. My role as running charities and football, they're actually, a lot of it is really, really similar in that it's so much passion, so much emotion, and it's about really connecting with community and the grassroots level. So I think I really enjoyed it and I hope to have a long career in football.
Yeah, well, actually, I did a training course at the Reach Foundation maybe 12 or so years ago. Is it still, I mean, he was a real pioneer in that space, Jimmy Steins. Is it still going?
Oh, yeah, it is. So just before I moved to Tasmania 3 years ago, I was the CEO of Reach. It's certainly still thriving and all about young people inspiring other young people. And I think certainly I've learned a lot about my own self-belief and probably I can attribute quite a bit of my confidence and leadership to what I've learned through the Reach Foundation to be able to obtain the roles that I have.
Yeah, I imagine he was such a great teacher. But so what? Looking forward, what are you trying to achieve in your role over the next 2 or 3 years as CEO of Tasmania?
Yeah, look, Tassie Footy, I came into the role, so I worked part-time when I first came to Tasmania and I worked for AFL Tasmania and then took on the CEO role a year ago. And when I took on the role, I basically walked into the perfect storm where Tasmanian football had an incident where two Northwest teams fell out of its state league and participation hadn't been that high in the state over the last sort of 4 to 5 years. So I sort of walked into what the media donned as a football crisis. And last football season, we really had to try and have some leadership in the space and look at how we can bring up those participation stats across Tasmania and really start to unite and grow the game. For those people that know Tasmania really well, there's three regions here. There's the south, the north and the northwest, and we really need everyone to start working together so we can unite the game and see more boys and girls playing because there has been a decline in participation. The last 2 years we've brought it back and it's 7% increase from last year, but we really want to work towards some bigger numbers.
Because there are bigger numbers, you know, as we know across Australia now. We're at the AFLW breakfast this morning, and they said that there's been 530,000 participants across the country playing AFLW. How are the numbers down there for AFLW?
Oh, so the female participation here has been really high. So it was a 45% increase last year on the year before. So 3 years ago, there were six girls or female teams in the state, there's now 84.
Wow. So that's incredible.
So what it has meant is that we've got girls participating at all levels in Tassie, but now it's like we need to make sure there's facilities that are female appropriate. We need to make sure that we've got coaches who can coach girls because it is different. You know, we've got to teach girls how to protect their bodies. Some girls are coming in as senior players who've never played before. So there's a lot of things we've got to do to make sure that with this explosion of female football that we can really service it and make sure they're safe in that environment.
That's what they were saying at the breakfast this morning too.
I was just about to say the same thing as Fiona Shani Layton, who played netball for Australia and started playing with Collingwood. You would know of her or may even know her. She was interviewed this morning and she was really interesting because she said, I always thought I was pretty tough and I could do anything and I could... And she said, it made no difference at all, my fitness and my toughness, because she said, the girls that already played and have grown up playing, they hit the bodies with such vigour that she said, I really had to learn immediately, you know, very quickly.
Oh, yeah. And you can see how fierce the competition is in AFLW. And so in Tasmania, we have a joint licence. So we've got the North Melbourne Tasmanian Kangaroos in the AFLW competition. So we have at the moment 8 Tasmanian girls on that list. And the target is that 50% of the list would be Tasmanian. And 3 of the girls work full-time at AFL Tasmania. And so we work really closely with those Tassie girls and just seeing what they're going through. They have full-time jobs. And they to play at an elite level and get themselves up is just an interesting concept. And to see these girls, certainly one that we've got in our office here in Hobart, Nicole Bresnahan, she would never have thought she could play, you know, AFLW. She's been based in Hobart. She's been able to live here at home and play at that level. And to watch someone live their dreams that never in their wildest dreams would have thought 5 years ago they'd play, you know, on the main stage like the men do, that's what makes all of this so worthwhile.
We're talking to Trish Squires, the CEO of AFL Tasmania. Trish, do you think things could be different if there was a permanent, or could grow even more significantly with everything that you're saying, if there was a permanently based team in Tasmania in the men's and women's?
Oh, look, I think that the addition to, if Tasmania was to have a licence in the AFL men's and AFL women's competition, would that increase participation? I'm sure that would increase inspires people to pull on a Guernsey to get to Auskick. We've certainly seen that around the state and around the nation, how that can do it, because we've seen it with when Hawthorn and North Melbourne, who currently now play in Tasmania, when they come to town, you do see the kids really respond to that. I really believe that what we need to do here is work on the base, which is about that participation. And when the AFL men's competition or AFLW competition was to expand, we obviously want Tasmania to be ready if that opportunity was to arise.
So you said earlier in this conversation that there is sort of 3 parts of Tasmania, the north, the south, yes, and the northwest. So I'm gathering that you need to get them all working together to get behind one team. If, you know, this is going to the future if you did get a licence. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, we've seen how the Hobart Hurricanes in the cricket, they've done it really well. They're obviously called the Hobart Hurricanes, but they play 2 of their matches in Launceston in the north, and that model has worked really well. Whereas, say, 10 years ago, you wouldn't have seen many people in Launceston support a team that was called the Hobart Hurricanes. So it just is about the model, I think, because now we have North Melbourne playing in the south, Hawthorn play up in the north. So I think it is about uniting the state in how they support footy and how we all work together. And I think then we've got more chance of it working and the model working.
Yes, well, I'm a Hawthorn supporter, and I know that a lot of us travel down to Launceston to watch our team play, and I'm part of the Hawks Pride group, and we're going down on an excursion this year, so
you have to look out for Trish and say hi.
Yeah,
see?
We'll have a coffee at the football. thanks so much for your time, Trish. It's always exciting for us to hear what's going on outside of Victoria. Believe it or not, we actually do enjoy that.
That's good.
Yeah, that's right. But well done with what's going on there. I think the footy in Tasmania can only grow and expand, and it's good to see the women are leading the way in that space as well.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much for joining us, Trish. See you later.
No worries.
Okay.
Now, it is our dinner table chat. We left it to the end of the show today because we've had so many friends on the show.
It's been wonderful.
Stuff to talk about.
Mm. Yeah, on our dinner table we like to talk about the issues of the week. Sometimes we'd call it the same chat that you might have at your dinner table. But I want to bring the entree today, which is actually a fairly hefty meal. But
it is.
I'm going to talk about Sam Newman. Now, this week he...
Silence.
Boom, boom. Yeah, this week he did a video and dressed up as a woman and mocked trans people in sport, essentially. So sort of the message was people are... transitioning so they can play in women's sport and taking advantage of that. That was the underlying.
Wow. Yeah.
It was the underlying message that he sent. And I know he did a joke about transgender people on the Footy Show a year ago. And our friend Angie Green from Stand Up Events, she actually texted him, messaged him on Twitter and Instagram after this, and she said, "I thought after our conversation last year, you may have left with an ounce of respect towards the trans community and human beings in general. But no, Sam, you are a bully. You know exactly what you're doing." And that's what she said to him. And then there was other people that piped up. Darcy Vesio from Carlton AFLW said, "This is disgusting and damaging. Zero care for other people's lives. Yuck. Trans people are people." She put on Instagram. There was a group of, people that are involved in this space that put together a public open letter statement about this. So Proud to Play, the AFL Pride Collective, and Stand-Up Events all got together and put together a statement about that. There's a couple of things I want to read out. It was Proud to Play, AFL Product Collective, et cetera, et cetera. So it says, "Sam Newman's post on social media is harmful and insulting towards transgender and gender-diverse people. His comments do not align with the way in which Australians expect transgender and gender-diverse people to be treated in this country and are baseless, untrue and disrespectful. Athletes do not transition their gender to gain greater advantage in sport." It's one of the dumbest things I think he said. They do to ensure they can have a life as their true and authentic selves. Sam Newman's comments only bring harm to a population that already face numerous challenges that cisgendered individuals will never have to face." And then there was a quote actually from Tanya Hosh. So she's the diversity inclusion manager at the or the general manager of inclusion in social policy. She said at the AFL. She said, "This commentary is ignorant and designed to humiliate. The AFL is proud to work with the LGBTI plus community to ensure our sport is welcoming and inclusive. And these comments are damaging to young trans people and the broader LGBTI plus community." So the AFL actually came in.
Yeah, stepped in on it, which they don't always do.
Well, they haven't so much in the past, but it's good to see they're very active in supporting this community when it's needed. And so we're really thankful that Tanya was part of that letter.
That's very shocking. I wasn't aware until we spoke prior to our radio show that had occurred. My concern is, as well as not only is it harmful and damaging and discriminatory, it also implies a level of malicious behaviour from a community or a cohort of people. And I'm perplexed as to why Sam Newman felt that was appropriate in any shape or form to put to social media.
Yeah, if he could claim ignorance at some level, but we know that he's had conversations with people that have educated him.
Well, it's been identified in the reply,
I think. And Grant, there was also Grant Thomas and Mike Sheehan that were in the video as well, laughing along with the joke.
And encouraging. Yeah. And therefore they're complicit and they should also be held to blame.
Yeah.
It's not good enough to say, "Oh, that was somebody else who did that. We were just there." I think that they should also be held accountable for that disgusting behaviour.
Well, Grant Thomas has come out and on Twitter as well and, you know, said, "The first thing I've done is ask Sam to take it down. I'm sorry if I offended," you know, standard sort of stuff
like
that.
But their apologies are always how it affects them. Their apologies, "I'm sorry that I've got in trouble." It's not, "I'm sorry that I have created this hurt."
Oh, I totally agree.
And that's my concern.
Anyway, I think it's great that that letter's been written, the statement's been made. It's a desperate attempt for relevance, I think, and there's just no hope for Sam Newman as far as I'm concerned.
Well, however, for a man that's no longer going to be on his, you know, primetime television show or all that sort of stuff, you're right. I think it's he's grasping for relevance.
His only way to be relevant is to spark outrage, and it's pathetic.
And it's intentional. It's not an accidental someone else snapping a photo and putting words in his mouth. It was done. It was his intent.
It's horrific.
Now, Rachel.
Oh, so I'll have a nice light.
Yeah, so the entree was a big meal.
The entree was quite
it's
filling.
Like a roast.
Yes, I feel like I need
for the main.
I feel like I need a nap after that. Yeah. Maybe a nice bottle of vino.
Yeah.
Mine is, I read a very interesting article that was written by Kate O'Halloran for The Age regarding a rule change. And the rule change was that the attacking player cannot be impeded in any direction if they elect to play on after being awarded a 50-metre penalty. That's the interpretation or the change. But what was very interesting about the article is Collingwood coach say that they were never informed of this rule change, and the Carlton coach indicated that they were informed around half an hour.
Before the game.
Before the game.
And did they have their first 100-metre penalty, 100-metre penalty in that game?
Yes.
Yeah, as a result.
So I mean,
100 metres in a women's football game, that's a long...
It's such a close game. We're getting to the nitty-gritty of the competition. Now, I believe the AFL say that they were informed, but putting that aside, I wondered everybody's views on what they thought about being informed properly and whether you think maybe... What the processes are. And the second thing is the great effect that's going to have on a game, particularly a close game, and particularly when you're considering coaching, as you're getting down to the nitty-gritty, as I've pointed out, about how you're going to play that night.
Mm.
That's probably going to affect a lot of decision-making from the coaches and the decisions made on the spot, on the bench.
Well, I don't know that I can add anything because I think you've nailed it.
Okay.
Totally.
That was delicious, ladies.
That main went down quite well.
Mine's super quick, and that is just a congratulations to Brendan Goddard, the AFL players. He voted him the Madden Medal recipient.
That's great.
Which is amazing for him, and it's acknowledgement of who... Mm. He's on field, but who is off field. He's been a very big supporter of the Purple Bombers, amongst other things. And there's an article written by Marty Gleeson, who's an Essendon guy, on the AFL Players website. Do you ever go to that website? AFLplayers.com.au. There's stories and players. There's journalist stories, but there's also players writing stories about all sorts of things, like, you know, for instance, anatomy of a debut. Jesse Keefe from the Lions has written. So it's good to see.
Mm. Yeah.
All right, thanks for... I had to scoff down dessert, sorry, Motti, but it is the end of the show. We've had a jam-packed show tonight.
We have.
I just want to remind you, too, AFLW Pride Game.
And the raffle.
And the raffle is... the Pride Game's on March the 17th at Witten Oval. We're going to be broadcasting from 3 p.m. Also, there's a raffle for the Bulldogs Premiership Team Sign Guernsey. Jump on joy.org.au. You can purchase a ticket. It will be drawn at the Pride Game. And next up is the gender agenda here on Joy 94.9.